WBEZ's nonprofit spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org. This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Crown Family School of Social Work Policy and Practice at the University of Chicago. The master's program in social work, social policy, and social administration prepares professionals to address today's most pressing challenges and offers flexible options with part-time and evening classes to support busy adults balancing complex schedules. Inspire change, shape the future at crownschool.uchicago.edu/social work.
I'm Michael Puente, in for Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset. The Democratic National Convention is less than 2 weeks away. Mayor Brandon Johnson has been racing to get Chicago in shape for the expected 50,000 visitors. From completing construction on the Damon Green Line station to bracing for thousands of protesters. Still, some folks are concerned that the city's transportation and police departments are ill-equipped for such a momentous occasion. All eyes are on Mayor Johnson as Chicago prepares to host a DNC for the first time in 28 years. To get the latest, I sat down with Mariah Wolfo and Tessa Weinberg, WBEZ city government and politics reporters. I started by asking what Mayor Johnson's priorities seem to be going into the convention. Here's Tessa.
Yeah, you know, he has three words he keeps repeating, that it's going to be a safe, vibrant, and exciting convention. And that's really been his refrain. He's vowing, you know, First Amendment rights are going to be protected for the thousands of protesters we expect to, be there marching ahead of the DNC and during it. He's vowing that neighborhoods are going to simultaneously be kept safe at the same time, that residents are going to be able to get around and not have their routines disrupted too much, and that the neighborhoods are going to share in the wealth. And so he's really promising, you know, that's going to be a seamless event. I think, you know, it's fair to say this would be challenging for any mayor to have to put on. And so this was an event that, you know, his predecessors had really worked hard to get. And so we'll see, you know, whether the city's kind of really ready to meet this moment for the world stage and the kind of Super Bowl of Democratic politics to come to Chicago.
That's right. You know, and the mayor, we know that his political career began as an organizer with the Chicago Teachers Union. So this is a pretty big role shift for Johnson. So how's he going about this shift, Tessa?
Yeah, it's something he points to as evidence for, you know, why he respects the power of protest, why he's vowing that protester and demonstrators' First Amendment rights are going to be protected. You know, he said, you know, I've participated in protests. I've taken arrests. You know, I have benefited from, you know, the gains protests have made. And so therefore, you know, no one is better suited to understand why they're so necessary. But, you know, it's also, I think, been a source of this political tightrope he's had to walk ahead of the DNC. Some progressive organizers, you know, who have had to sue the city to push for these protest routes to be closer to the action. You know, they've been critical, saying that's not how a progressive mayor should be behaving, that we shouldn't have to sue to make this happen. Whereas, you know, one Democratic strategist we talked to for a recent story, you know, previewing kind of the role Johnson will have, said, you know, he's going to be closely watched, though, for how he does respond to protesters and demonstrators, how he maybe defends police and their response, especially if these protests do turn violent or if they, you know, resemble what we saw in 2020. And so regardless, I think there will be a lot of eyes on him to see how he responds to this. And I think his background has been, you know, a source of criticism then for people, you know, on either side.
Sure. Well, Mariah, some progressives have been challenging Mayor Johnson for denying protest permits with direct access to the United Center. Could these decisions cause him to sort of lose credibility among his progressive base?
Yeah, I think we're already starting to see some criticism by some of the groups that have had to sue the city for access to sight and sound, to protest within sight and sound of the United Center, which is really what people want. They want the audience of the many political insiders who are descending on Chicago for the convention. the group Bodies Outside of Unjust Laws, for instance, is, you know, being represented by Andy Thayer, who said that, you know, this is not the way a progressive mayor should be behaving, you know, including with negotiations over the mass arrest policy that CPD is working out, as well as, you know, the security perimeter and having to take the city to court to get the protest route that they want. Organizers have also pointed to the city's handling of a protest earlier this year where organizers blocked the highway on the way to O'Hare Airport, and the city is pressing charges against dozens of protesters, even though the state's attorney's office isn't pursuing those charges. The city, the city's law department, under the direction of Johnson, is going to pursue those charges regardless, and organizers have asked, you know, why is a progressive mayor pursuing these types of charges that the state's attorney's office has itself said, you know, aren't worth pursuing when it is nonviolent civil disobedience. But, you know, it also depends on which progressives you ask. One of the main groups, the U.S. Palestinian Community Network, which is based in Chicago, has said they have been encouraged by the good faith negotiations that they've undergone with the city. Of course, they are still trying to negotiate what this protest route will look like, and maybe we'll get a decision from a judge in the next week. But, you know, the leader of that group, Hatem Abudeya, said that if they were negotiating with former Mayor Lori Lightfoot or former Mayor Rahm Emanuel, he thinks that they would be acting very differently, perhaps, you know, politically targeting the city in a way that they haven't been as outright critical of the Johnson administration, saying that Johnson is a progressive, he's one of us, and we do believe he's been negotiating in good faith and that they'll be able to come to some sort of resolution. We are coming up to the wire in 2 weeks here, within 2 weeks of the convention.
So what would be, regardless of the permits to demonstrate, thousands are going to be out there marching at the convention. So Are the police planning? How are they going to respond? Are they still threatening mass arrest?
So the police have been working with the Consent Decree Coalition, which is a coalition of community organizations that help oversee Chicago's federally mandated consent decree that oversees police reform. And those groups have been working with CPD on a mass arrest policy, and they've gotten some wins. You know, the police department has agreed to not engage in the controversial tactic of kettling, where, you know, you decrease groups, you corner groups to kind of corner them, get them into smaller areas. You don't let people leave, and you get people down to a number of people where you can make those arrests. It causes a lot of anxiety for people who kind of get trapped. So the police department reportedly will not be allowed to engage in that controversial tactic. But there still are some concerns. There's not the group, according to the group, there's not a strong enough ban on using pepper spray against protesters, for instance. And so this is going to be very closely watched by reporters, by Johnson's base on both, and by Johnson's opponents on both sides.
You know, on the flip side, Tessa, some folks have raised concerns about the city's ability to keep both the neighborhoods and the convention goers safe amid what the CPD has called an officer shortage. So how is the city going to respond to these concerns?
Yeah, you know, they say that they can do both. They've pointed to the DNC as an event that they've, you know, they know it's been coming, they've been planning for. They say they're adjusting officers' schedules, continuing the controversial practice of canceling officers' days off. But it's, you know, going to be definitely an all hands on deck situation. Ultimately, you know, this is a national security event, so the Secret Service will be leading the way on security efforts. But CPD, of course, is going to be assisting and heavily involved. And they will be getting help from outside law enforcement agencies as well. They say there's going to be some 500 or so expected officers from outside Chicago who are supposed to come and help the, them, you know, be able to keep the city safe during that time. But the Chicago Tribune recently had a good story reporting how, you know, a lot of details aren't really known yet, though, about where those officers are going to be coming from, what the plans look like. They did say that, you know, CPD had told the Tribune that officers will primarily be from Illinois, some from Milwaukee, and that regardless, officers are going to have to undergo 12 hours of training. They're expected to have minimal contact with the public during that time while they're in Chicago. But we even saw at the RNC some of those outside law enforcement, there had been some someone who was shot and killed. And so I think, you know, people will be kind of anxiously watching to see just what that whole law enforcement response looks like.
Tessa, do we know, I know part of this might be speculating, but is some of this keeping the things under wraps, either the city being disorganized and just can't say, or the Secret Service actually saying, we don't want all that out?
Yeah, I think that's a good question. You know, it's something that both, you know, the ACLU of Illinois and these progressive protesters who are want these things finalized, want the protest route in place, they have been really pushing for, you know, the city and for police to more clearly communicate what exactly is happening. They argue that, you know, if everything is communicated clearly, then we won't have confusion. And, you know, some folks I've talked to do point to, you know, maybe denying permits or this confusion. They worry it's only going to lead to more chaos day of if people don't know the rules, don't know what to expect and what they can and can't do. So I think a lot of the, you know, the ACLU and protesters would argue we want to be clear what is allowed, so that way we can, you know, exercise our rights and also not run into issues with police or with protesters. And so I think, you know, they would advocate for more information rather than less, but we're, like Mariah said, kind of down to the wire and still don't have all of that really fleshed out totally yet.
WBEZ's nonprofit spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org.
How does AI even work? Where does creativity come from? What's the secret to living longer? TED Radio Hour explores the biggest questions with some of the world's greatest thinkers. They will surprise, challenge, and even change you. Listen to NPR's TED Radio Hour wherever you get your podcasts.
So let's take a look at transportation. The Damon Green Line station, that's completed now. That's just a few blocks from the United Center. How will this impact both DNC attendees and Chicago residents?
Yeah, so that opened just in time for the DNC. Opened yesterday on Monday, and it's a half mile from the United Center, which is really where most of the action is going to be happening when it comes to the convention. So, you know, it was really essential the city race to get this done. But more than just for the DNC, it was also just a really long-awaited stop that folks wanted open for residents. A station at that site was closed in 1948 by the CTA, and this was a huge $80 million project that took 7 years to complete due to delays. So it won't be a big deal just for the DNC and essential for folks to get around during the convention, but also just for residents, you know, for years to come to finally have this stop be open.
Now, Mariah, we've been hearing a lot about the CTA problems, just hiring people and getting enough bus drivers. So the CTA has committed to providing up to 250 buses to help transport convention participants. But how will this affect the regular bus routes, Mariah?
Yeah, so the CTA has agreed to provide the buses, maintenance, and staff, like drivers, needed to get people from their hotels to the convention. The Tribune had a story that reported that the DNC host committee is actually going to pay the CTA a little more than $4 million if all of the, you know, 250 buses that the CTA and the city are promising are used during the convention. You know, it's really a question, which you highlighted, of whether they're going to have drivers, enough drivers in the seats of those buses. I'm sure the city is going to do everything they can to flood the routes that affect the United Center with the drivers and buses they need. I think the main question is, does that affect buses elsewhere in the city that are used by residents getting to work? And so that's certainly going to be another storyline here, is how efficiently the CTA runs for the city's residents, even, you know, if there's not many bumps for convention participants.
So another sort of a DNC-related initiative is relevant to Chicago residents. The DNC is working with the Tourism Art Choose Chicago to promote Chicago neighborhoods among the convention attendees. So tell us a little bit more about that initiative, Mariah.
Yeah, so from the beginning, this has been a huge promise from the DNC host committee and former Mayor Lori Lightfoot when she was pushing for the DNC, and now Mayor Brandon Johnson, that the economic impact of this massive, you know, 50,000-person convention attention will not just be concentrated around the United Center or in the downtown hub, which is where tourists tend to go to see the Sears Tower, to see the Bean, but it will actually, you know, trickle out into Chicago's 77 neighborhoods. Like, I don't have to tell you, Mike, we're a city of neighborhoods. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you could go to like five different countries and like, you know, 77 different cities just by traveling to different areas of Chicago. And so really, though, the main effort that they're undergoing is kind of plastering the United Center and McCormick Place with QR codes that push people to these digital neighborhood guides that Choose Chicago has on its website, where you can go and search. If you want to see Mexican art, you can search Mexican art or culture, and it will bring you to, you know, their guide on the National Museum of Mexican Art in Pilsen. And or if you just want to see what's Pilsen about, you can go to Pilsen's digital guide and see what restaurants you should go to there. There are 47 neighborhood guides. They also have a Black culture guide, a Latino culture guide, an LGBTQ history guide. So all of these things are trying to promote. They're not doing any like guided tours or tour buses as of now, which is my main question is like, how I get it, you know, you make it easy with these guides, but how do you get people to be like, yeah, I'm going to take a 40-minute bus ride or, you know, a $40 Uber to Pullman to see the Pullman National Monument? There still are barriers to this neighborhood tourism.
Well, I think if you're coming to Chicago for the DNC, just, you know, follow the aromas. You know, Chicago is great for food. Maybe circle Calumet Fisheries. I know that's in the deep far southeast side, but it's worth the travel. So bottom line, we got less than a minute here. Tessa, all things considered, does it seem like the city is ready to host a DNC?
You know, we'll find out. I think they're trying to do everything they can. I think protesters, the ACLU would argue they want to see some of this finalized and in shape. You know, they wish probably it was already done already. And so we'll see how that comes together. But, you know, when folks have hosted the DNC in the past, you know, for our previous story we did of Mayor Johnson, you know, Bill Daley had said that there's only so much you can do to prepare. And ultimately, it comes down to how you react when the proverbial stuff hits the fan. And so I think that's what we'll be watching for, of how does the city react for the things maybe it didn't even know to prepare for.
Well, we've been speaking with WBEZ City Government and Politics reporters Mariah Wolfel and Tessa Weinberg. Thank you both for coming in today.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks.
This episode of the Reset Podcast was produced by Ellie Gilbert Bear. It was edited by Meha Ahmed and mixed by Max Lubers. Reset brings you the national and local Illinois news you need to know. So don't forget to tune in this afternoon and subscribe to the podcast so you never miss another conversation. I'm Michael Puente, in for Sasha Ann Simons. Thanks for listening.
My name is Liz, and as a teacher, I think that WBEZ provides endless sources that I can bring back to my students where they can also engage in a deeper understanding. I teach government, I teach U.S. history, and I have used sources from WBEZ in order to help enrich the understanding of my students.